So a number of years ago, when the first George Bush was president of the United States, he went out campaigning for his second term in office. And so he's on the road, and they needed some gas, and the driver pulled into a gas station just on the side of the road. And as the attendant started fueling the car, Mrs. Bush, she gets out of the vehicle, jumps out, she's excited, and the gas station attendant, she just grabs him and hugs him, and you could tell this is some kind of amazing relationship that she had with him. So they finish talking, and she gets back in her car, and she sits back next to her husband, and he's like, "Who is that?" And she said, "Oh, it was an old high school boyfriend." And he said, "Barbara, do you realize you're married to the President of the United States? And if you'd have married him, you'd be the wife of a gas station attendant." And she said, "Oh, George, don't be silly. If I'd have married him, he would have been the President of the United States." So we've been talking about Abraham. And I think it's important to realize that rarely do you see successful men without a great wife supporting and encouraging him. And so I really like what Isaiah 51 says. He says, "Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness." That's us. Like, we pursue righteousness. We want to be holy. And so he says, "Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness, who seek the Lord." He said, "Look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. Look to Abraham, your father," which we've done, over 13 weeks. And then look what he says, "and to Sarah." Not just Abraham, but look to Sarah, who gave birth to you in pain. And I love that Isaiah says to look to Abraham and to Sarah. Because Sarah has kind of become the forgotten partner. Yet she's the one through whom Israel was born. The promise came through her. It wasn't just Abraham. Because if that was true, it could have come through Hagar. But it was through Sarah. And if you think about it, Abraham, he heard God's voice. And God appeared to him. But Sarah had to trust Abraham's voice. She had to trust her husband. And this is a guy who's already sold her out twice. So what we know about Sarah is she was a good wife. She was a good mother. She was a wingnut at times, right? She had her faults. She had her issues, just like the rest of us. But the name Sarah, when God renames her from Sarai to Sarah, her name means princess. She's a princess. And so God listed her with the heroes of faith in Hebrews 11. Peter named her as an example for Christian wives to follow. Paul used her to illustrate what the grace of God looks like in the life of a believer. And so she wasn't perfect. She had faults. But after going through menopause, she had given up hope. She thought, "There's no way I can bear a son." So she suggested that Abraham have a baby with Hagar. And then when Hagar bore Abraham a son, Sarah blamed her husband. Sarah made life in the camp so miserable for Hagar that Hagar would rather, she opted to face the wilderness rather than to be alone with her. When Ishmael grew up, Sarah insisted that Abraham disown the boy and evict him. And what we're going to see today is that she's 127 years old when she dies. So just think about this. If she got married at the average age in that day, which was 15, if she got married at 15, that means they were married for 112 years. Okay? Now you guys are thinking, "That's a long time to be married," right? And some of you are thinking, "I am so glad we don't live 127 years anymore. I can't imagine being married to that for that long." But imagine this. It wasn't until after they were married for 50 years that their lives changed completely. They became nomads. Can you imagine? Been married 50 years now, and hey, it's time to leave. Where are we going? Out into the wilderness. We're going to go wander around. Why? Because God said. Really? They'd been married over 50 years at that point. And so there's so many life issues for us to learn, so many life lessons for us to learn here from this part of Abraham's life and from Sarah's death. And so let me give you kind of a forewarning. We're going to spend the majority of our time in verses 1 and 2. Okay? So if you're thinking, man, we're like, you know, 30 minutes into this and we haven't even gotten past verse 2 yet, we'll fly through the rest of it. But verses 1 and 2, we're going to spend a long time on. So Genesis chapter 23, let's begin in verse 1. He says, now Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. Now in my Bible, I circled two words in this first verse, and it's the word lived and life. And when you read the Hebrew, what it does is it really emphasizes this word. It emphasizes two times, and what he's saying is Sarah lived life. She lived it. She lived 127 years. These were the years of her life. And think about all that is summed up in just that. She lived. She lived 127 years. That's a long time. And you think about all the stuff that could happen in 127 years. And when you sum it up in one verse, you would say, Sarah lived life. She lived life. 112 years they were married. This year, Sherry and I are celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary. Okay, 30 years. And I think, wow, that's a long time. And so what I did is I looked up, what's the gift that you give for 30 years? Okay, so it depends. There's two different calendars. And on the modern calendar, it's diamonds. Not for me, I'm sure, but for her, diamonds. Diamonds on the modern calendar are on there for the 10th, 30th, and 60th. Okay? Now, on the traditional calendar, it's pearls. And what I think is interesting is when you look at the traditional calendar, diamonds are only found there once. When you look on the modern calendar, it's found three times. And I'm thinking, there's a woman that did this modern calendar. What do you get somebody for your 112th? I mean, just think about that. So it's been 112 years. What do I get her that she doesn't have? I mean, we think about all those years. Think about all the tears that would have been shed, all the laughter, all the memories, all the fights, all the hard times. They were nomads. Think how many miles they walked together as nomads. I mean, how many times did they set up camp and then have to break it down and move and not even know where they were going next? How many fights did they get into about extended family? Remember, they had Lot as extended family. And then she finally has a baby at 90 years old. And how exciting would that have been for her? But in one verse, Sarah lived life. That's what the Hebrew is emphasizing. She lived life. And so if you're taking notes, Roman numeral number one just simply says, enjoy the gift of life. Enjoy the gift of life. Enjoy it. You know why? Because it's short. Even if it's 127 years, it's still short in the big scheme of things. And the reason that so many of us really don't enjoy life is because we're always thinking about, like, what's the next thing? Like, that's kind of the idea is, like, what's next? Because that's gonna propel me. And so it's like, what are we going to do next week? Or where are we going on vacation next? Or what classes am I taking next fall? Or what series are we doing in church next? And whatever season of life we're in, it seems like we always want to be in the next season, right? And so, like, if you're a six-year-old in here, you can't wait to be the double digits. I want to get to 10. I just want to get to 10. You know what 10-year-olds want to be? Teenagers. Yeah, if I can just be a teenager. You know what teenagers can't wait to do? Drive. Can't wait to drive. Because once I can drive, then I have freedom. And then once they're driving, they can't wait to be out of the house and to get into college or to get a job or do my own thing. And then once they do that, they can't wait to get out of college and get a job. And then once they get a job, they're like, man, I can't wait to get married. Then once they get married, they're like, I can't wait to have kids. And once they have kids, like, can't wait till the kids sleep through the night. And once they sleep through the night, they're like, well, I can't wait till they're old enough to play sports or go to school. And then once they can do that, they can't wait till they can drive themselves to all these sporting events. And then once they start doing that, you're going, I cannot wait until they get out of this house. And then once they get out of the house, you know what you're thinking? I can't wait till they come back. Then you just start over. It's always kind of that next thing. But Sarah, live life. Like, whatever the season of life that you're in, like, live life in this season. Not just what's next. It's like God has something for you right now. And I'm not saying don't plan ahead. Right? That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying you should plan ahead. But in planning ahead, don't miss what God has you for you right now. Live life. It's too short to not enjoy time with your kids. It's too short not to enjoy time with your family. It's too short not to enjoy time away from the stress of work. So I'd finished my sermon, and I was talking to Christina on Friday evening, and she had taken the kids to Chuck E. Cheese on Friday. And so she had such good insight. And so if you've never been to Chuck E. Cheese before, then here's what happens. Kids play. There's all these games that they can play. And so some of the games give tickets. So you put in your coin, which costs like 25 cents or whatever. So you put in your coin to play a game. And then depending on the game, you might get like 3 tickets back. And then you can take these tickets, and then you take the tickets and you buy stuff from the store. Well, some of the games, the fun games, you only get a few tickets. The gambling games, if you hit it, I mean, you just get a slew of tickets. Now, those games aren't so fun, but you can earn a whole bunch of tickets from them. And so here's what you see. You don't see the kids really excited until the parents get excited. And so you get these parents that are walking around with like wheelbarrow full of tickets. And I look at my kid and hey, put another coin in there and so, oh, look at all these tickets we got. And they're just racking up tickets. Now the kid wants to go play over there because that's fun, but no, we can't do that because we've got to focus here because look at all these tickets. Then we can take these tickets and we can buy all kinds of stuff in the store. And then when you go to the store and you put all your tickets in, you go, wow, you have enough tickets now, not to get that really nice bicycle that you see there, but you can get miniature plastic Frisbees, okay? And, okay, you're not done yet, you can get cheap sunglasses and 4 Tootsie Rolls. It's true. So you know what Christina did? She tells the girls, play what you want. Don't worry about the tickets. Just have fun. Like don't just focus on the tickets. And you know what? And I thought, wow, that is a great illustration. You know what we do a lot of times? We live our lives for the tickets. And we are so consumed with getting more tickets. And when it's all said and done, you know what we're buying? Miniature Frisbees, cheap sunglasses, and 4 Tootsie Rolls. And it wasn't worth it. I mean, you get to the end after you've spent all this money, all this time, all this energy, and you're cashing in your tickets, and you realize, I could have had a lot of fun. But instead, I was focused on these tickets. You have to enjoy where God has you today. Because there is no promise for tomorrow. None. No promise for tomorrow. And I can tell you this, you're not going to be sitting on your porch at 80 years old, surrounded by grandkids, wishing you had spent more time at work. Or man, if I would have just read one more Facebook post, then my life would be complete. Or if I would have just watched one more show, because I missed that one episode, that then the other episodes, that, like you're not going to be worrying about that at 80. What are you doing today that you'll regret tomorrow? Where are your tickets? You can't get time back. And what is it that's preventing you from really living life? And I try to think, how do I encourage you in that? And the best way I can do it is this. Stop it. Start living life. So if there's conflict in your family, get reconciled today. Today. Don't wait till tomorrow. You don't have tomorrow. We're not guaranteed tomorrow. Get reconciled today, because if you don't, I promise you that you're going to regret it later. Life's too short to hold a grudge. Life's too short to be bitter. As far as it depends on you, Romans says, you be at peace with all men. And as Christians, we've been given the ministry of reconciliation. It's like, well, I don't know what God wants me to do. Here's what I know. Don't hold grudges. Don't be bitter. Don't make excuses. Be reconciled today. I know that. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, I can verify it through the Word of God over and over and over again. And so don't miss what's right in front of you by only focusing on what's next. And how you live your days today, that's how you'll live your life. And James says your life is just a vapor. It appears for a little while, and then it vanishes. It's gone. It's like on a cold morning, and you breathe out, and you see that little vapor, and it's there in just a few seconds, and then that's it. It's gone. You can't ever get it back again. I'm sure if Sarah were here, she would say, listen, guys, I lived 127 years, and it went by like that. It was so quick. Life is so short. It was gone before I knew it. Those 112 years married, so quick. But she lived life. And it's important that we do the same. Look at verse 2. So Sarah died in Kiriath Arba. And you're going, where is that? Moses says, Hebron. Okay, that's in Hebron. It's the land in the land of Canaan, and Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. So this is the first time we see Abraham weep. First time. We haven't seen it before. We've seen other people weep, but not Abraham. And he's mourning the death of his wife. But it's not the first hard thing he went through, right? He had to leave his home after 75 years living there. That had to be hard. His dad died. That had to be hard. He had to send away his own son Ishmael, his son Ishmael, his oldest. That had to be hard. God said to kill your son Isaac. That had to be hard. All of these are hard things, but the only time it says he cried is when Sarah died. It wasn't until his princess died that he cried. He spent over 100 years with her, and then she dies. And he grieves the loss of his best friend. Which brings us to point number 2. Grief is normal. Grief is normal. And let me just say this. It's okay to not be okay sometimes. Okay? It's okay to sometimes not be okay. And I know there's pressure in the Christian circle that you have to put on the happy Christian face as if nothing bothers you. And, you know, all things work together for good. And so I know that. And so God even uses bad thing to work together. But listen, I know that's kind of the idea in our culture. But that's not godliness. Scripture affirms that there's a season for all things, including crying. Including mourning. It's okay to cry. It's silly to think it's unchristian or lack of faith to mourn. There's clearly a time to mourn. Even Jesus, remember, he mourned when Lazarus died. And he knew he was going to raise him just a few minutes later. The shortest verse in the Bible, it says, Jesus wept. And so telling people to get over it and move on and it's no big deal, that's actually not Christian. It's Buddhism. Because in Buddhism, it says you should be able to separate yourself and detach yourself from the emotions. It's not Christian. And there are things that are okay and worthy of grieving. And when people who are made in the image of God and in the likeness of God, when they die and they go into the next world, it's okay to grieve. It's okay to cry. That's good grief. That's really good grief. The difference for us is that as Christians, we can grieve with hope. Look at 1 Thessalonians 4. He says, "But we don't want you to be uninformed, brethren, about those who are asleep, so that you will not grieve as do the rest who have no hope." You see, without hope, grieving turns to despair. Despair turns to hopelessness. But we have hope. I'm one of those guys, like, I really like hunting. I do. I like hunting. I like most things about it as long as it's cold. I don't like hunting in the heat. Sometimes when we go hunting, we go really early in the morning before the sun comes up, because the idea is you want to get into your stand, and then as the animal starts moving around, then you're already there. And so sometimes you have to get there like an hour early. Well, I know the times when I've hunted up in Ohio, it is so stinking cold. First time I went up there, I'd never hunted before. They gave me a gun and said, "Hey, you got your military ID, you should be fine. Just shoot, you know, deer when it comes across." I didn't know what to do. I grew up in Clearwater, you know, we don't really hunt there. And so I'm out there, and I'm thinking, man, it is so cold. And so I'm running in place and doing jumping jacks and trying to keep warm, and I didn't see any deer. No idea why. And so I'm talking to the guys, and they said, "Hey, you know, you probably want to make sure to clear out an area in that you can kind of, you know, go 360 in, and so there's leaves there, and you don't want them to hear the leaves cracking." I'm thinking, I'm sitting there doing jumping jacks. Are you kidding me? And so, okay, so now I got that down. And be really, really still. And it's below freezing. You know how hard it is to be really still in the dark and it's freezing? But I would. And I can sit there and I can be shivering because I know the sun is coming up. And when the sun comes up, I have hope that an edible creature is going to walk in my sight. It's the hope. I can wait through that because I have hope. The reason we can grieve with hope is because the sun is coming back. Like, that's why we can grieve with hope. Like, I know that one day I will see my loved one again. And I know, like, nobody wants to talk about death, but listen, if you're married in here today, it's likely that either you or your spouse is going to be a widow someday. Very likely. In my case, I've often thought, Sharon and I tease each other and say, I'm going first. I actually would rather her go first because I want to take care of her. I think that's my role. I don't want her to go anytime soon. I just want her to go first. I feel like that's my duty. I would hate for her to leave her alone. You know, one day your parents are going to be gone. My kids have one biological grandparent still alive, and that's my dad. And death is a reality in life. And we act like it's so strange, but, you know, if you look at the statistics, they're alarming about death. 100 out of 100 die. Everybody does. And when you look at Abraham's life and when he's trying to bury his wife, he could have gone into these towns, he could have demanded land, he could have took it with military might, but he didn't. In fact, what you're going to see is there's mutual respect as he does this land deal and gets a place to bury his wife. Look at verse 3. "Then Abraham rose before his dead and spoke to the sons of Heth, saying, 'I am a stranger and a sojourner among you. Give me a burial site among you that I may bury my dead out of my sight.' The sons of Heth answered Abraham, saying to him, 'Hear us, my lord, you are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our graves. None of us will refuse you his grave for burying your dead.'" And so here's the offer, is they say, "Abraham, your wife has died. Use any of our tombs." That's a pretty generous offer. But you've got to understand the history behind this is in this ancient culture, the people believed how they were buried affected how they'd spend their afterlife. And so to bury Sarah with their people would have suggested that wherever their people were, that's where Sarah was as well. And so for Abraham, that's not an option. He needs a new place. He's the believer in the one true God, not in the not in the multiple gods. And so look at verse 7. So Abraham rose and bowed to the people of the land, the sons of Heth, and he spoke with them, saying, if it is your wish for me to bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and approach Ephron, the son of Zohar, for me, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owned, which is at the end of his field, for the full price. Let him give it to me in your presence for a burial site. And so Abraham here, he wants more than just to bury his wife. He wants a family tomb. You ever seen in the Bible where it says, and he died and he was gathered with his fathers? It's like, why do they say it like that? Well, the way they would do it was when a person would die, their bodies were laid on a shelf. So you had this cave and you had all these shelves. And so when a person died, they would take the body and they would put it on the shelf. And after the body completely decomposed, they would take all the bone scraps and they would just gather them all together, and they would put the bone scraps in one bone box called an ossuary. So you were gathered together with your fathers. It literally just mixed in everything together. Well, Sarah was going to be the first ancestor of a new nation to be buried in this Hebrew tomb. Later on in this tomb, she was joined by Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Rebekah and Leah. We know those people for sure. I'm sure there were others also. You can go there today. It's actually the second most holy site for the Jewish people. I heard it's really hard to get in. I've never been there. But you can go there now. But he says we've got to do something different. And so look at verse 10. He says, now Ephron was sitting among the sons of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the sons of Heth, even of all who went in at the gate of his city, saying, no, my lord, hear me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. In the presence of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. And Abraham bowed before the people of the land. He spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, if you will only please listen to me, I will give the price of the field. Accept it from me, that I may bury my dead there. And so initially, when you see Ephron, you think, wow, that's a really generous offer. But Abraham rejects it. You know, why does he reject it? Well, I think he rejects it because by having ownership, it gives him control over the future of this cave. Plus, let's say Ephron dies, and so somebody else owns the cave. They might rescind the offer. And so Abraham realizes he needs to own it. Look at verse 14. Then Ephron answered Abraham, saying to him, my lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that between me and you? Some versions say, what is that between friends? So bury your dead. And Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, commercial standard. And again, what is 400 shekels of silver? For us, that means absolutely nothing. But 400 shekels of silver, when you look at other land purchases in the Bible, this is a lot of money. It's kind of like if you said, let me just give it to you. This is too expensive. It's $12 million. You'd never want to pay $12 million. Oh, $12 million? Okay, here you go. Oh, he paid it. It's like the contractor who doesn't want to do a job. And so the contractor says, I don't want to do this job so bad that I'm going to charge them way more than they would ever want to pay. And then they go, sounds good. I want you to be the person who does the job. And they pay it. So Ephron's going, 400 shekels of silver. Come on, what's that between friends? Well, I don't want you to have to pay that kind of money. Abraham says, okay, here it is. I'll pay it. Now, there are a lot of crooks in the funeral business, aren't there? And a lot of people will use this time to rip people off or manipulate them. And so I thought it'd be good. Let's just talk about grief. Let's understand, there's a great book I have in my office called Good Grief. But let's talk about grief, because I think it's important to understand as a church. I think this is actually the first time I've ever preached on it in this way. And next week we also have a first time, which I'm really excited about. We're going to talk about Isaac getting his bride and what that looks like. And so we're going to talk about how to get a bride, how to find a bride, or for you young ladies, how to find a husband, which I used to talk about all the time doing student ministry, but we haven't done that yet in here. And so let's talk about grief. Number one, don't rush it. Don't rush it. You know, some people are able to work through things really quickly. That doesn't mean that everybody can. Okay, for some people, it takes years. For others, it affects them their whole lives. And yet others seem to be able to work right through it. A good friend of mine was on vacation in England. He was 10 years old. And his mom was in a car accident. And so they're on vacation. Mom gets in a car accident, dies in England on their vacation. I'm 48. He's a couple years older than me. And I remember him telling me after my mom died, he said, "Mike, it's been over 35 years since my mom died, and not a day goes by that I don't think about her." And I bet a lot of you guys can resonate with that. The first year after a loved one dies can be really, really hard. First Christmas without your dad. First Mother's Day without your mom. And let me just say this, it's okay to not be okay. Like that, it's okay. We're not created to forget things. So be patient, don't rush it. Grieving can take a long time. You want to see proof? Look at Isaac. Look on the screen, Genesis 24, verse 67. "Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. Thus Isaac was comforted after his mother's death." Well, here's what we understand. Isaac got married to Rebekah when he was 40 years old. Okay, so Isaac was 40 when he got married. Sarah was 90 when she had Isaac and 127 when she died. You know how long Isaac mourned before he was comforted? 3 years. It took him 3 years. It's okay to not be okay for a while. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to mourn. We just went through Mother's Day. And when you look at Mother's Day on Facebook, you know what you see the majority of people? It's talking about how much they miss their moms. Mother's Day can be really, really difficult. And so we need to be really sensitive to that. And we're a body. So when one member of the body suffers, like, all the members suffer with it. When you mourn, we mourn. When you celebrate, we celebrate. We're family. And I know that seems obvious, but when I talk to people who are grieving, you know what the vast majority of them tell me? They say, "Mike, it's like people are just avoiding me." You know why they think that? Because they are. They avoid them. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. And so they just figure, well, I'm just going to keep my distance. They think that, well, if I say the wrong thing, then that's going to ruin everything. And I don't know the right thing to say, because if I can just say the right thing to say, then I can fix it. You can't. I remember when Hope had a friend, or Hope and Sam both had a friend in Ukraine, a teenage girl that had a baby, and then the baby was 1 year old and it died. And she said, "Dad, what do I say? Like, what do I tell her? What's the right thing to say?" And I said, "Hope, there's no right thing to say. But there are a bunch of wrong things to say. Don't say those." And she said, "Do you know what her aunt told her?" She said, her friend was just weeping, and her aunt said, "It's okay. It's okay. You're 16 years old now. You got your whole life ahead of you and not a baby to have to worry about." There's not a right thing to say, but there's a bunch of wrong things to say. You don't need to fix it. And you don't need to be scared of them. You know what you need to do? Just be there. Just be there. Be available. You see, being in community with one another, it's so vital to your life in the church. That's why I want you guys to sign up for our summer shepherding. Why? Because when tragedy strikes, maybe it's not your house, maybe it's somebody else's house. But when tragedy strikes your home and you're not in community, what are you going to do? How can we mourn with those who mourn? How can we serve you in your greatest time of need? And if something tragic happens tomorrow, listen, that would be tragic. But we know it would be even more tragic is that you have nobody to call and nobody to turn to. Nobody to mourn with you as you mourn. Nobody to grieve. Nobody to arrange things and set up meals and sit by you and just be there for you. That would be tragic. And so taking the time to get to know one another and to be known by one another is vital to your life. And so number one, first thing you do, don't rush grief. Don't rush it. Number two, honor your loved one. Abraham honors Sarah. He's grieving and honoring at the same time. And we see it all the way through that text. Whatever it takes, I'll pay it. I want my wife to have the best. That's to him, that's the most honoring thing to do. Funeral directors will take advantage of that. When my mom died, I was so grateful that her and my dad had written out all their desires really clearly. So we knew what they wanted. She communicated a couple things while on her deathbed, but for the most part, everything else was really spelled out. And for us as a family, both of my parents were first-generation immigrants, so we didn't have this long history of family. You know, my dad was in the military, so we just moved from one place to another. And so I had, like, my grandparents in the Philippines died, but I never knew them, so it wasn't a big deal because I had no connection at all with them. When my grandmother in Greece died, there was a connection, and so that was a little more difficult, but we were separated. I mean, she was in Greece. We didn't go to a funeral. I didn't see the dead body, none of that stuff. So the first person really in our family that died was my mom. And that's hard. But because it was so spelled out, I was able to honor my mom by serving our family. And just helping to work through these things. And because I'd been in ministry and kind of dealt with death from that, if we could say from the professional side, it allowed me to kind of step in and serve and help and love on my family. And because of that, my sister's now a believer. That God used even those difficult things. My mom became a believer there on her deathbed. And so we're just able to serve. But I so appreciate how she spelled things out. And we wanted to just honor her. What were her wishes? What did she want? So let's do those things. Well, some things were a real big deal. The things that she spelled out clearly, those were a big deal. We wanted to do those things. Some things weren't a big deal. One of the things she asked is if I would preach the gospel to her family and friends. And so I preached her funeral. And since her and my dad already had everything purchased, we just did things in steps. Now, one of the things that they had done is they'd purchased everything for cremation. And they had a place that, you know, to put their ashes. And I would say this, personally, I am not a fan of cremation. I'm not. I'm just not a big fan of it. Cremation began, and when you look at the history, with the Unitarians. And they did that as a mockery to the resurrection. And so Christians would said that they'd be resurrected to new life, and the Unitarians came up and with cremation saying to mock the resurrection. Yeah, raise that. So for me personally, that I'm just not a fan of cremation. Now, that wasn't the battle to fight, though. So, you know what? I know what God can do. He can raise anybody from the dead. He can gather those ashes, create a new body out of that. Didn't matter the condition of the bones. And so even though I wasn't a fan, the most honorable thing for me to do was support what was clearly written out. And so if you are a parent in here today, actually, if you're anybody in here today, spell it out. Make sure your loved ones know what you desire, so that they can honor you and they don't have to figure it out. Number three, keep moving forward. One of the quickest ways to depression is to do nothing, is to just sit and do nothing. You have to move forward in some way. Abraham loved Sarah. They were married. They shared life for about 112 years together. But God wasn't finished with Abraham. He had more life to live. He had a big responsibility to complete. And one of his responsibilities was, I need to find Isaac a wife. That was his job. We'll talk about that next week. But Abraham lived another 38 years after Sarah died. And then sometime after Isaac got married, Abraham found love again in the arms of a woman named Keturah. And they had 6 sons. And I include that because I think it's important to realize that the death of one spouse doesn't end the life of another one. And that may seem obvious, but it's not. And we've seen so many times where grown children expect their parent, their surviving parent, to live like a monk the rest of his or her life. And then if you get married, you know, too soon, whatever too soon is, if you get married too soon, people then start going, oh, I wonder if they really loved them. Or maybe they had something going on beforehand. Listen, I can't imagine being married to anyone else. But death breaks the marital bond. And it frees the surviving partner to marry again if he desires. Now, to the original audience, Abraham buying this land was a huge deal. Because this was the start of the fulfillment of God's promise that they were going to be given this land. And if the tradition of the world in that culture in that time would have been to take Sarah's bones back to Ur of Chaldees, okay, and bury her there. But by burying her in Canaan and by purchasing the land, he's making a statement saying, this is our home, this is the land that God promised. It's the only land that he ever owns. And as I thought through this, I thought, wow, this is a common theme in the Bible that God promises something that doesn't get fulfilled until later. In Hebrews 11, it says that all these died in faith without receiving the promises. So they died believing something was going to come, and they didn't even see the fulfillment of it. Abraham, what does he get? He gets Isaac. He gets a little bit of land. That's all he sees of all these promises God gives. That's it. I mean, it's crazy to think that it takes the death of his wife in order to see him, for Abraham to see a little bit of the promise. Prior to Sarah dying, you know what he saw? Isaac. Once she dies, then he sees the beginning of the promise being fulfilled of saying, I'm going to make you a great nation. All this land is going to be yours. But it wasn't until she died that he was able to see that. And it's a perfect illustration for us. Because we don't experience the fullness of God's promises in our lives until death. Right? It's not until we don't get to experience the physical presence of Christ until we die. We don't get to experience, you know, that joy eternal until we die. That's why our hope is not in the present world. Our hope is in the future. Which brings us to point 3 we'll close with, is the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come. You know what, as Christians, this is as bad as it's ever going to be. You ever think about that? Like, it's not going to get any worse than this life. The best is yet to come. Joel Osteen wrote a book called Your Best Life Now. That's only true if you're going to hell. Right? Otherwise, this is the worst it's ever going to be. And the irony of it all is that in order to see the fulfillment of life, you have to die. In order to get God's best, you have to die. I don't know if you've ever read Pilgrim's Progress before, but in Pilgrim's Progress, Pilgrim, he fights through life and he gets to the end of life and he can see the celestial city and he wants to go there, but there's a river preventing him from getting there. And the river is called the River of Death. You don't take a boat to get over it. You can't walk around it. To get from here to there, you have to go through it. You have to go through death. And so him and Hopeful, remember, they work their way through it. They finally get across, and then when they look down, their dirty rags are gone, and they're clothed with gold. And these two angels welcome them into the city. But in order to get there, they had to go through death. You see, to get the ultimate fulfillment of God's promises, this body has to go away. The perishable has to put on the imperishable. The mortal has to put on immortality. You can't handle heaven in this body. You have to have a new body. But you can't get the new body until you die. Look at 1 Corinthians 15. He says, but when this perishable will have put on the imperishable, and this mortal will have put on immortality, then will come about the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? And these are the questions that we're going to be asking. And I know you read that and you hear funeral verses and stuff like this, but just think about this. We get to mock death in heaven. We get to mock it. If this was our day, and if we were writing it, we would say, this is the na-na-na-na-na-na, right? Hey, 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 goodbye. This is the Florida Gators jingling their keys, right? Game's over, fourth quarter, you're down by 30. Leave now. Beat the traffic. They're mocking them. This is singing, we are the champions, my friends. Death, where's your victory? Where's your sting? And death seems so powerful, and it seems so final, but it's not. One day, we won't fear death. We'll mock death. It won't be a fear for us. We're going to mock it. Where's your victory? Where's your sting? And Abraham and Sarah, you look at their story, it parallels ours. Like them, we get the best that God has to offer at death. We see the fulfillment of his promises at death. And since Jesus rose from death, we're going to rise from death. And if he didn't rise from death, we have a real problem, right? And Abraham stakes his claim by purchasing a tomb. And that's what we do. And the difference is, Jesus didn't buy a tomb. He just borrowed it. 3 days, that's all I'm going to need it for. And if that tomb has a body in it, we're lost. And if it's empty, we have hope. And if you're not a Christian in here today, listen, you want to know what it's about? It's really simple. We're sinners, separated from God. God left heaven. He became a man. He died on the cross as our substitute, and he rose again. He beat death by rising from the grave. And when we place our faith, our trust in his work for us and his promised resurrection, we're given hope that we will do the same thing. If he rises, we rise. And our tomb is empty because God sacrificed his son for us and raised him from the dead. And Sarah, you know what? She's alive now. She is. She's with her husband and her grandkids. She's with the Old Testament saints. And she'd say, life is short, guys. It's short. Don't waste it looking for the next thing. Live life today. And there are times to mourn, but you can mourn with hope because the best is yet to come. You have not yet seen. And whenever I preach a funeral, I always say the same thing. I say, you know what? We want them back so badly. But if they could look down here right now, they'd say, it's great up here. This is better than anything I would have ever imagined. We don't have to mourn for them. We mourn for us. Let's pray together. Father, what a great promise that is. That one day we won't have to fear death, but we get to mock death. That the promises that are yet to be fulfilled in our lives will be fulfilled in death. And that's where we have our hope. Because Christ rose, we will rise. And so, Father, I thank you for the life of a lady named Sarah, the princess, where it's so clear that we can see so many neat things about her life. Didn't have it all together all the time. But when you look at the pattern of her life, she lived for the things of God. And may we do the same. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.